Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
What makes a great culture and how do you keep it? Hello, everyone. Kevin Cruz here. And in just a minute, we're going to talk about culture, women in tech, and a lot more. But first, congratulations. You believe in lifelong learning. You believe that to achieve more, you must become more. You believe that leadership is the key to making a difference, to making an impact. Whether you listen during your morning commute or maybe on your morning run, you know that LeadX helps you to stand out and get ahead. LeadX is the smartest way to start your day. And today's one-minute career tip is reflect. As busy as you are, it pays to pause at the end of your workday and to reflect on your own performance. Consider this a self-leadership practice. You are coaching yourself. What do you ask yourself? Well, it depends on what your focus is, but you might ask questions like, how much time today did I spend working on my annual goals? In what ways did I model our company values? If you're a manager, you might ask questions like, who did I help to grow today? Who did I recognize? How did I remind my team members of our mission and vision? So just remember, and I'm going to quote the great leadership thinker, Ferris Bueller, life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it. Take time to reflect. Now, I'm very excited about our guest today. She's a very special guest, Executive VP and Chief People Officer at Red Hat, a company that does $2.4 billion in annual revenue, offering open source software solutions. In this role, she leads the acquisition, development, and retention of talent and works to enhance the Red Hat culture. Our guest is Delisa Alexander. Delisa, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kevin.
I am excited to dive into workplace culture issues, but first, I always ask our guests the same first question. I'm hoping you're going to share a time when you actually failed at something, maybe early in your career, because we want to know, what did you learn from? We want to learn from your failure too.
I have many stories of failure, but I'll pick one.
All right.
And so that means I've learned a lot.
That's right. Right. You're a good learner.
That's right. The story that I'd like to share, it is goes back to earlier in my career, and it's actually when I first joined Red Hat. That was back around 2001, and I had been practicing law as an attorney and doing the deals for technology companies for a number of years. So when I was hired to be the second lawyer at Red Hat, I thought I was being hired as an expert that people would consult with and listen to because, you know, my billable hourly rate had been high enough in the past that if people were paying me, they'd be listening to me.
Right.
And so I expected that if people asked me for advice, that they would immediately listen. They wouldn't require a lot of justification or understanding about why I came down the way I came down. I expect that they would just listen to me. And what happened at Red Hat was completely the opposite of what I expected. To my great surprise and a little bit of dismay, I discovered that people didn't automatically give my opinions a lot of weight. Instead, I had to have a dialogue and really explain my thinking and my conclusions. And sometimes the people that I was providing that perspective to actually had a lot better understanding of the open source licenses and the regime that we were working in than I did. So it was really, really painful for the first time in my legal career that the credentials and like the law firm hierarchy just wasn't supporting the value that I was adding at all. And I had to really take a step back and think differently about how I could add value at this company. I mean, even senior management was not setting expectations with their team members like, oh, she's the lawyer, you have to listen to her. Not at all. It was like, have a dialogue. Does this make sense? And so that failure really required me to step out of the hierarchical comfort zone that I had been working in for many years at a law firm. And it was kind of like my first foray into learning what it meant to lead without hierarchy, which is kind of the first step to being a leader in an open organization.
So much good stuff there that you shared. And of course, that's a big message of the LeadX show, is that leadership is really about influence. And even if you have a title or some authority, it's usually you have to lead long term just through influence. And I mean, would you agree that this cultural trait of kind of meritocracy, like it's okay to fight and challenge ideas, it's especially strong in the tech industry, isn't it?
It is. I think that engineering mindset provides a nice environment for debate.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a clarification question, because as I am looking back on the bio that I read, I understand anybody who has a tech background will have heard of Red Hat and knows about open source software. But I just realized we our show reaches 148 different countries, all kinds of age ranges. Not everybody's going to be familiar with the concept of open source. Can you just explain that to our audience?
I'd love to. I used to think of myself as an open source evangelist when I was practicing law for Red Hat. So open source is a totally different way of creating software than is typical. In the typical way, what people do is they write code, and then they protect that code using copyright law that really makes it impossible to share the source code outside of special licenses. So there's no modifications allowed, there's no additions, there's no use at all without a license. And so that is a proprietary model that has worked very well for many years, because it protects the intellectual property and it protects the investment, right? That's right. The theory. In open source development, we take copyright law and you flip it on its head. We call it copyleft. And it requires sharing. So anyone can see the code, anyone can improve it, anyone can create a derivative work. But then what's required if that happens is that if it's distributed, it needs to be distributed with that source code so that anyone else can take advantage of that innovation. And what we believe and what we find to be the case is that with many eyes on this code, without boundaries of licensing and companies, for example, you have a lot of additional innovation and challenges and creativity that can be brought to the particular problem that's being solved. And so what we find is it's rapid innovations, rapid change, and very, very, very powerful technology that must be shared.
Now, the business savvy listeners in the audience are going to say, okay, that's great. You're opening up the code. It has to be shared. How do you make your money?
Well, that's
business model-wise, right?
Yeah, that's business model innovation, which we also did. Mm-hmm. We had to figure that out. It was not, it wasn't clear at first how we would make money. In fact, I think we tried selling magazines and mugs for a while. That was not sustainable.
That I didn't know. That is hilarious. This is worth the interview right here.
But eventually, we figured out, you know, how do you add value, right, beyond the code? The code is something that's available to the community. So what can Red Hat do that's different that you can't get from the community? And so what we found is that companies, enterprises that would like to use open source software because of the benefits of open source also found that they didn't want to support it themselves in an un-enterprise ready version. And so what we do is we harden it, we test it, and then we have partnerships with software vendors that provide the most important enterprise applications and also hardware vendors, so that our software can be used in an environment that requires security, it requires business critical systems to be always up. And then, of course, we've got the support around it as well, and the constant innovation. So that's the model that we've used, and the subscription model. So that was at the time we created that model, it was very, very unusual for a software company to have a subscription-based model,
right,
for the services provided. And we were not charging a fee for the software.
Yeah. So LeadX listeners, this is a little bit of, behind the scenes or inside baseball, but this is really important stuff. And I think many of you out there can apply this thinking to your own businesses, your own offerings. And, you know, LeadX, the company, is all about providing world-class leadership training, professional development to anyone around the world at any time, free of charge. You know, that's my mission. I want to help 100 million people develop their leadership skills. So how do you do that free of charge part? And I looked at two things. I mean, I looked at open source models, studied Red Hat quite a bit, you know, viral things spread virally when they're free and they're open, and then you can charge for services and support. And then I also looked at a similar but different model of freemium, and that's what we've, you know, chosen for now, that you can get things for free on the schedule that they're released. But if you want access to everything, if you want it on your schedule, then you're going to pay a subscription, similar to what Delisa just said. And I think that no matter what you do this day and age, the value of having that subscription revenue rather than just a one-time product revenue, having some amount of what you do, what you offer, to be available for free, as counterintuitive as it is, in this day and age, that's how you'll get the growth. That's how you'll get a commanding position. So thanks for explaining that. That was a little bit of a detour from our leadership talk. And I want to go, you mentioned you joined Red Hat in 2001. Company had 1,100 employees, which I would have thought, hey, that's a pretty big company. You now have over 11,000 employees. You've been recognized by all kinds of organizations for a great workplace culture, high employee engagement, which is really my area of focus. So describe your culture. I mean, what's unique about it, and how have you maintained it, you know, scaling from 1,000 to over 11,000?
So the culture is rooted in open source. So I've described a little bit about open source, but the two kind of values of the community that I'll highlight are transparency and meritocracy. And so meritocracy is all about the best ideas being the most valued, and not because it's the best idea from someone with a title, but because it's the best idea. So our culture is really rooted in the values of the open source community because, one, we hire a lot of great people that are working in the communities every day, and two, we are working in those communities every single day. And so luckily for us, there's a constant reinvigoration of those values into our culture. And what results is this open exchange and transparency that accelerates innovation and agility. And that's what makes us kind of the open organization and our definition of that. And because we believe our culture is a big strategic advantage for us, we do think about this a lot. One of the great things that we've done to be able to maintain the culture is to be able to have a lot of our people that we hire come through referrals, which we have a program called the Red Hat Ambassador Program. And like almost 50% of our hires come from that program. And that helps us to cultivate our culture. But once we're interviewing people, and whether or not they've actually been a referral or not, what we're testing for in the interview is whether or not they're going to be able to be really effective in our environment. And a lot of that has to do with influence versus the hierarchical approach. And what we found is that most of the time we do a pretty good job of ferreting out whether or not someone's really going to be effective in the environment. But even if we do that, once they get here, we needed to provide support for them to be effective over the long term. And so we did a couple of things to help with that. The first thing that we did is we spent some time really discovering by talking to people around the globe what it is about leaders at Red Hat that make them really different. We asked the question really using, you know, an appreciative inquiry approach, you know, on our best day, what do Red Hat leaders do that's the same as you might find at other places, and what do they do that are really, really different? And we didn't legislate it. We didn't have any preconceived notions about exactly what we would discover. But over a period of many months, we kept hearing the same stories and the same words over and over and over until we finally felt comfortable saying, okay, we're putting this in writing. It appears we have come to a conclusion and discovered how we would describe what makes us really different and special, so we could describe it to people with words that can help them to be more effective in the environment. And we call that our Red Hat Multiplier.
So give me an example from the Red Hat Multiplier. Like, what are some of those words or skills that were identified?
Sure. So I would say the first one that I would describe is transparency. And transparency means, you know, sharing as much information as you possibly can with as many people who have an interest in it versus hiding information and data because perhaps information and data give you power. Okay, so that would be an example. You know, collaboration, working effectively across boundaries. And then meritocracy, you know, really valuing the best ideas. So connection, trust, transparency, collaboration, and meritocracy are the five keywords that we use to describe what Red Hat leaders are doing when they're on their best day. And we also like have these descriptions that describe overuse of that powerful behavior and right. underuse. So for example, with meritocracy, you could use it as an excuse just to be rude, right?
Right.
Or you can do it in a great way where you're sharing value. And so we use this, we put these behaviors and we actually like have them in our competency model, our leadership competency model with these behavioral descriptors so that people can see on our best day. And we have different proficiency levels even so right. that you can see over time how you can progress your ability to be effective in our environment. What we found is that even when we had those descriptions written out, people would come on board and still not know how to make decisions in a way that reflected what people expected in the open source world. And so we were still having some backfires. And I can tell a story about that if you'd like.
Yeah, please, please.
So about 3 years ago, I think it was July 3 years ago, as a matter of fact, we were having one of those moments where we were having this debate as a software company, you might expect that we could create all of our own software and it'd all be open source. Everything that we would use internally, right, would be open source. Well, no. That's actually completely impossible given what's available in the market and given that what we are providing is not every single possible piece of software that a publicly traded company would need to use, right?
Right.
But it didn't matter that's the facts. There's still a debate all the time about our internal technology use. And it was becoming very distracting at one point. And I was very, very concerned about it because we do have such an open exchange. It could be really distracting to people who are focused on getting their work done to be watching a debate about technology really raging, right? And so I thought, why do we keep having this conversation over and over and over? Isn't there something that we can do to help people make decisions in a more transparent way so that the debate doesn't have to happen? We have to keep going back to this over and over and over. So I pulled together a SWAT team and said, hey, can you guys, you smart people who are brilliant, you know, you guys come up with an approach that we can share with others of how on our best day we have made decisions in a way that people understand the criteria for the decision, they can refer back to it, they can contribute to it, they can find the bugs, and that we can end up in a place that's far better than the initial probably hypothesis of what the decision should be.
Right.
And so the team worked together and then they applied that practice to the decision at hand, and voila, a much better decision was made. And so we created what's called the Open Decision Framework. It's on GitHub. We posted it there. Other companies have now taken the framework and they've modified it to use themselves in a way that works for their environments. But at the end of the day, now we have behaviors and we have processes described on our best day. This is how you can be super effective in an open organization like Red Hat.
So on this note, you know, Gallup often puts out their research that shows that about 70% of the variance in employee engagement is tied back to who the manager is, who the boss is. Mm-hmm. Same organization, same CEO, same mission, vision, values, all that stuff. But someone reports to me, they're disengaged. Someone reports to you, they're very engaged. With your experience and what you've seen at Red Hat, I mean, does that feel right that a lot of engagement is tied to, not all, but a lot, about 70% is tied back to the manager?
Absolutely. I mean, as a company and as a people team, for example, you know, we try to help foster an environment and foster people who are leaders. And, you know, at Red Hat, we expect everyone to be a leader, not everyone's a manager, but it takes a really, really special person who's committed to being a manager to be effective as a manager. So there's a difference there.
And so what, in addition to sort of the written behaviors and decision frameworks, I mean, do new managers go through some kind of boot camp in the process to reinforce this? You have training programs that they continue to go through?
Yes, we do. We do have training programs, and we've worked our open source principles into our training programs, as that's a big way of scaling our culture.
And so now this is a little bit different. I mean, I'm on this topic of a first-time manager, a new manager, not so much like the Red Hat way, but I mean, think about the first time you had to manage people in addition to influence from afar. Like what would be just some practical advice? There's a young professional. She's got a team for the first time. You're having a cup of coffee. Like what would be one or two pieces of advice you would give her?
That's a great question. I actually had a good friend ask me this question about 2 weeks ago. And she came to me and said, I have an opportunity to begin managing the team I'm currently on. I'm so worried, though, about becoming the boss. And I was like, okay, stop right there. Let me help you with a really easy mindset shift. You're not the boss. You are the catalyst for your team. Help create a meritocracy where every one of the people on that team can be at their best, understanding their strengths, helping them to close their gaps, and helping them to come together as a diverse team, leveraging those strengths under a shared vision. Your job is to help everyone be their best and to create the best team. It's not about being a boss. Like, you just shift that mindset, and you just think how energizing that would be to go into work every day thinking about how can I help everyone be at their best.
I love that. I've often said I feel like I wish all the business cards out there that had the word manager on it changed it to the word coach. You know, that just because you're a good salesperson doesn't mean that the next step is sales manager. It's like, do you want to be a coach or not? Are you good at coaching others or not? And I love that, being the catalyst. Now, shifting topics a little bit. You've done a lot of work. You've written about, you've spoken about the need for the tech industry to do better in the area of diversity, and especially getting more women in tech. And as we're doing this this interview in July here, I mean, in the last month, the headlines coming out of Silicon Valley have been horrific about what women face as they're trying to raise money, as they're working with advisors, which is one issue. And then employees who are discriminated against routinely, it's just such a crazy issue. How do we start by getting more women into tech to begin with?
Yeah, given the coverage, it makes it seem pretty daunting, doesn't it?
It sure does.
I think the conversation that's happening right now and the transparency is incredibly important. So while it is difficult to hear these stories, it's so important that they're coming out and that we have a conversation about it. At Red Hat, you know, I'm super proud of the things that we are doing as the open source leader, that we're acknowledging our role and how important it is for Red Hat to take a leadership position in challenging the status quo. Now, first of all, I want to acknowledge that where we are right now as an industry, and even as a world, right? It's not just this industry, but right. There's many different industries that suffer from the same syndrome. It's a system, right? It's a whole system of things that are creating this outcome. So changing that system will take, you know, more than one company. And so all of the companies that are having the conversation, even the media coverage highlighting this, is important to change that system. What Red Hat has been doing that I'm really proud of, a couple of things I would highlight. And I would challenge every company to be thinking, what are the one or two things that you can do that make a difference? And all of us together can come together to make a difference. But what Red Hat has been doing is a couple things. One, we know it's really important that we create role models of women who are participating in technology and also particularly in open source. And there's not a lot of role models out there. Mm. Role models are really important for girls as they're thinking about what they want to do. We know that sixth grade is about the time that girls start to turn off in the U.S. from the idea of STEM being their area. I have a 16-year-old daughter, and it dismays me every day that she will not even consider focusing on, you know, math in the future or technology. But that's another story.
I've got two teenage girls, and from when they were the littlest to now, they've excelled in math, in the science topics. And early on, I'm like, STEM, 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 and they have no interest.
So this is part of that system. Like, what is it that's creating this culture where girls just aren't interested in that? Mm-hmm. And they don't really understand what the opportunities are, though. I think that's part of it. So the role models where women and girls in school can share their passion with girls and with other women who are in the technology industry who are considering opting out, right? We think that's critically important. So we created an award called the Women in Open Source Award. And there's an academic award winner and a community award winner. And this is our third year. It's a peer nomination process. So, you know, Red Hat does not pick. Red Hat Right. does not participate or pick. But the community makes the nominations. We do help to narrow down the field, and then we put it out to the community to vote. And these women are selected by the community. And now we're highlighting them so that there are more role models. And over time, I expect this kind of to be more of a program and to be something that does make a difference in girls' lives. These women are already making a difference in girls' lives, which is really exciting. And it's great that we can play a role in highlighting what they're doing.
That's great. That's great.
I'm really proud of that.
In this vein of advice and you know, women helping women to be successful in tech and other industries, you know, we talked about our daughters. My oldest is 19. She's still in college, but a couple more years she'll be joining the workforce. Now, let's say she does join Red Hat, and let's assume she's got some ambition. What would be your advice to her, really to any new employee? You know, what should they do to stand out and to get ahead, to be sort of viewed in a few years as like, there's someone for our high potential program, or, you know, we're going to keep an eye on this person. What advice would you give to the new employee?
Well, particularly because of the world we're living in today, where it's, you know, it's volatile and rapidly changing and uncertain, right? That world requires, I think, a set of behaviors and mindsets that are really open and high potential. So I'll highlight a couple of them. First is the idea of being curious. Standing in curiosity as much as possible, to learn as much as possible, but also to avoid being judgmental. What I find frequently is people believe that they've got all the facts, and they kind of set their own view, and they have a judgment, and that judgment can be completely wrong because they have not stood in a curious spot. Mm. They can fully understand the perspective of others and then come back to really thinking through how they want to come down on an issue. So standing in curiosity is critical in this world. And then being receptive. What I mean by that is being open to feedback about your own performance, making it safe for others to share feedback so that you can be constantly learning how to be more effective. I find frequently, again, that people get in their own way because they're not open to feedback. And particularly girls, they just don't get solid feedback because it's not safe. People don't make it safe, right?
Right.
So being curious and receptive to feedback, but that requires you to cultivate your own personal resilience, because getting feedback
right.
and not always standing in judgment means that you're going to hear things you don't always want to hear. And so being able to be resilient is, I think, the third factor in being high potential.
Yeah. And LeadX listeners, again, great advice here. And it's so triggering to me. I mean, I think, Delisa, when you talk about just standing in curiosity, what a great phrase. And I do feel that, I mean, we all suffer from it. Like, if you might not think you're judgmental, but if you've already made your mind up about something, a decision, you know, in the workplace, whatever it is, that confirmation bias kicks in. You're only seeing the data that confirms Yep. your foregone conclusion. But if you truly stood in being curious and being open-minded, then all of a sudden you notice things. You actually notice things that you're blind to if you're not curious to begin with. And of course, I hate getting feedback. I mean, anyone's ever said, Kevin, I got some feedback from you. I groan. Like, I ain't going to think it's a compliment. No one asked permission to give me a compliment. But feedback, it's a gift. And that's what I even do it on this show. I always beg our listeners, send me an email, kevin@leadx.org. Tell me what's one thing I can do to make the show better. And I cringe. I get mad when I read it. And then, you know, 5 minutes later, I'm like, they're right. And the show becomes a little bit better. So, listen, before we wrap up, I like to challenge our listeners to become 1% better every single day, just a little bit better. So give us a challenge. What's one thing we can do today to get a little closer to fulfilling our own potential?
So my challenge to you is to understand how to generate your own energy. Understand what you're passionate about, what your strengths are, and where your talents lie. If you really understand yourself, right, and then spend more of your time doing things that give you energy so that when you leave your workplace and you enter in the other facets of your life, you can be at your best.
I'm blown away by that because, okay, so I'm gonna hitchhike on your challenge because I opened the show talking about reflecting at the end of the day. And these are great questions. And I want to say, what are you passionate about? You know, what are your strengths? What's your talent, right? I mean, if you're playing to all those areas, you could go home at the end of the day with just as much energy or more than when you woke up and left.
That's my hope for everybody at Red Hat anyway.
it's great. And I think you're with 11,000 employees and the culture they have. I mean, you're obviously doing a whole lot right in this area. So Delissa, I want to thank you for coming on to the LeadX show. And I want you to tell our listeners, how can they find out more about you and about Red Hat?
Well, redhat.com is a great place to start. And then another one of my favorite websites is opensource.com. That website has a lot of leadership stories and sharing and a lot about open source from technology to things outside of technology. And so those are two great sources.
Fantastic. Friends, you've just been mentored by EVP and Chief People Officer at $2.4 billion Red Hat. Don't forget, you can get the links Delissa just mentioned and the notes from this interview over at leadx.org. You can also download our free ebook, Richard Branson's 7 Secrets to Leadership, at leadx.org/Branson. Until next time, remember, leadership is not a choice because leadership isn't about authority. It's all about influence. That's what we've been talking about. You influence people when you speak up and take action, but also when you choose to remain silent, when you choose to be a bystander. You are influencing, you are leading all of the time. How will you lead today?